I'm Dan Rodericks, and this is Midday Friday. Maryland's new Republican governor, Larry Hogan, gave his State of the State address on Wednesday, and it did not go over well with the General Assembly's Democratic leadership. In this hour of Midday, we get the perspective of someone who used to serve in the state legislature, but who now runs one of the state's largest counties. Rushern Baker is beginning his second term as Prince George's County Executive. He's taken issue with a few of Governor Hogan's proposals, including a cut in state funding for the county's public schools. He also questions the governor's plans to repeal the stormwater remediation law that has already been put into place in PG County. Prince George's County Executive Rushern Baker on Midday Friday after the news. Good afternoon, everyone. Welcome to Midday Friday. Dan Rodericks here. Thanks again for joining us in WYPR Baltimore, WYPF. Saying hello to folks in Frederick and Hagerstown, WYPO, over on the Eastern Shore. Hello to everybody in Ocean City. And hello to everybody everywhere who's listening online through WYPR.org. Governor Larry Hogan, Maryland's new governor, gave his first State of the State address this week, during which he laid out his agenda for the current year and the years ahead. Among those items, a repeal of the law that authorizes a stormwater remediation fee for Baltimore and nine counties, tax relief for small businesses, tax relief for certain retirees, and elimination of inflation-indexed increases in the state gasoline tax. That's what he proposed in terms of tax relief. My guest during this hour of the show is Prince George's County Executive Rushern Baker. Rushern Baker has just begun his second term as County Executive, and he's with us now to talk about Governor Hogan's proposals, the stormwater fee. We'll talk about that, all of it here, aid to education, the red line, the purple line, a lot to talk about. Nice to have you visiting our studio, Rushern Baker. Welcome back to Midday.
Well, thank you. It's good to be back, Dan.
Your reaction to what you've heard from the governor, his speech the other day did not go over that well with members of the legislature where you used to serve. I was a little surprised to see some of the reaction there to the speech was pretty strong. They felt that it was a political speech, that the governor went too far in characterizing Maryland's economy as being, not in great shape. And apparently there's a quote from Mike Miller here, the president of the Senate, saying that I see very little in that speech that's going to become law this year. So, your reaction to this?
It was, you know, having sat through a lot of gubernatorial speeches at state of the state when I served in Annapolis and the last 4 years as county executive, I have to say it was one that was surprising, especially given the comments the governor had made beforehand and some of the picks that he made, cabinet picks that I think are really good and good people. But it was, you know, for a lot of us, we look at the last, you know, at least 4 years, I've been county executive in the last 20 years dealing with politics in the state of Maryland. You know, Maryland's made great progress, in terms of education. You know, we were number one in education for 5 years in a row. This year, we're number three in the nation. We're one of the wealthiest states, if the wealthiest state and the wealthiest nation on earth. So certainly we're doing something right to keep people here. Us in Prince George's County, if you look at, what we've done around businesses to attract it. So I think people wanted a more upbeat speech, and I don't think they got that. Examples of what people are doing right, I think, is what they want to hear.
It was interesting because the speeches that he made when he was on the stump running for governor, you can understand that he's running against an incumbent, basically, Anthony Brown, a lieutenant governor who had been there for 8 years, lieutenant governor to Martin O'Malley. And he's got to make the case that things aren't great. I can make them better. I'm a businessman with lots of experience. And he won an election based on that. But now, I guess the reaction is, well, how far are you going to go in characterizing the state as being such backwater? And so you have the reaction to that. And plus, he's talking to people who are, he's basically blaming for the mess that as he perceives it, right?
Yeah, the folks who've been there for the last 8 years, I mean, there's 60 new members in the House and a few new members in the Senate. But by and large, the people, especially the leadership, this is the longest-serving president in the United States, Mike Miller. But Michael Bush is the longest-serving speaker. So many of the policies that were pushed through, they helped push through. And I think they've made Prince George's County and the state of Maryland stronger. I think certainly the governor wants to add to that. And we're just hoping, you know, it's his first state of the state. He's getting his hands around it, and hopefully, you know, it'll improve.
What do you say to people, and I'm sure you hear this even in Prince George's County, taxes are too high, businesses are leaving the state, retirees are leaving the state, millionaires are leaving the state. A Gallup survey showed, and Larry Hogan quoted this again the other day, that if they could, 42% of Marylanders or something like that say they would leave the state because, you know, a lot of people actually didn't grow up here, moved to Maryland for jobs, especially with the federal government. But I'm sure somebody stands up at a town hall and you hear this. So what's your response to that?
Well, I mean, we've had to deal with it right off the bat. When I came in as county executive, the feeling of Prince George's County was really down. And the feeling of the state of Maryland because of, you know, stuff that was self-imposed, you know, criminal issues that were going on in the administration. Businesses didn't want to work with us because not just because they felt like they'd be shooken down, but because, you know, regulations. You know, it wasn't so much taxes. It was the burden of dealing with a bureaucracy. And one of the things that we have as county executive, I can't raise property taxes and revenues. So what I have to do is figure out how I get businesses to stay in Prince George's County, cut through some of the red tape. And I think this is what the governor could have said. We streamline how businesses, the permitting process, and to make it easier for businesses to come here. We put a $50 million incentive EDI fund to attract businesses to come to Prince George's County. So I think when people are leaving, what they're leaving for is they want the quality of life. I counted the number of businesses that have left the county since I've become county executive, major businesses. And it was one. It was Beretta. And that was because of a disagreement with some legislation.
Having to do with guns. That was a political disagreement.
It's a political disagreement. Montgomery County lost no businesses over the last 4 years. So I think the state of Maryland is strong. It's poised to get cyber businesses to come here. It's poised to take advantage of the fact that we're, you know, both Baltimore City and the Washington suburbs are the economic engine of the state, and we can grab people toward this Washington region and Baltimore region. So I think for us, you know, when I hear it, you know, nobody wants their taxes raised. I agree with that. I don't want mine raised. So what we've done is, and as county executive, and I think this is what we'd ask the governor to do, is with a limited budget, we've funded the priorities. We've made cuts. I've asked every agency in the government for the last 4 years, and I'll do it again this year, to make cuts of 10%. But where we've increased is around education and public safety. That's why our homicide numbers are going down. That's why the quality of life is better.
Let's talk about education. We'll go point by point here through some things that are in the state's budget as presented by Governor Hogan. What kind of a shortage are you looking at in terms of funding? What had you anticipated? Where's the shortage for Prince George's County?
Well, we anticipated with the geographic index that we would get about $34 million. I think it was altogether somewhere around $40 million we would get. The governor is proposing to cut that in half. What that does for us in real dollars, you know, in real dollars, is that if the school budget, which they're proposing right now to send to me, you know, Dr. Maxwell in our county, is going to be, he's including the $40 million he would get from the state as if he had it in there. And then he's asking for an additional $34 million on top of that to meet with the growing student demands. We have students that are coming back into our school system. We're offering choice programs, Spanish immersion, art, things that make the school more robust and give our parents more choices. So if the governor's cut stays in there and I've got a gap of, you know, $34 million, it ends up being what he wants the taxpayers of Prince George's County to grapple with is about $80 million. We simply, as a county, don't have that. We don't have the ability to raise revenues.
So you certainly wouldn't be able to expand programs.
No.
Well, so what's your approach then on this what looks like a $20 million cut in state aid to your schools?
Well, what we've done is we've certainly teamed up with Baltimore City's Mayor Stephanie Rawlins-Blake, County Executive Ike Leggett, and I, and we've gotten together and we said to our delegation, this is unacceptable. We as jurisdictions, especially with the bulk of students in the state, we can't accept this. We can't make it up at the local level. So we understand these are tight budget times, but I'm facing a $117 million budget deficit in fiscal year 16. I can't make it up. Neither can the mayor of Baltimore City, and neither can the county executive of Montgomery County, which is one of the richest counties in the state.
Let's talk about another thing that Governor Hogan has talked about as a campaigner. He said he would call for the repeal of the law that authorized the stormwater remediation fee, ridiculed by Republicans and others as a rain tax. Now I know that in Prince George's County, this idea of dealing with stormwater pollution has been around for a while.
Right.
And there's a particular program you have underway there, a private public partnership.
That's right.
That I wish you'd describe for our listeners here. It's an opportunity to hear from you directly how this is playing out in Prince George's County.
We think it's a great opportunity. What we've taken is a federal mandate is what this is.
Yeah.
So you can't repeal a federal mandate at the state level. So we need to start with that. So there are 10 jurisdictions in the state of Maryland which must do this by federal law. What the state has said that each county and city have to figure out how they're going to deal with the cost of this. What we did in Prince George's County was take it as an opportunity to grow jobs and revenues. So we entered into a public-private partnership with Corvius, one of the leaders in this area.
Corvius, that's the company that's managing your your operation?
They're going to manage our operation.
Is that a Prince George's County company, or are they from somewhere else?
They're a Canadian company originally, but they've moved a headquarters to Prince George's County. This is going to be a 20-year project or 10 to 20-year project. Billions of dollars are going to be spent, but it's an opportunity for us to meet the federal regulations, which is to deal with the pollutions and runoffs of these surfaces that are polluting Chesapeake Bay and others, but also create jobs and businesses at the same time. So we try to make it a win-win. And by including, and this is one of the few that has been done in the United States of this public-private. So it's not just the government coming in and saying, we want a fee from the taxpayers. It's us saying, we're going to bring in a business that's going to put up money. We're going to put up money, and we're going to grow job opportunities at the same time.
So you set a fee. Prince George's County set a
right.
fee. Is it $62 per household, something like that?
It's about that.
All right, because I saw that number somewhere. Mm-hmm. And also there's a fee on businesses with impervious surfaces, right?
Right.
Okay.
And, but the more you remediate, mm-hmm. the less the fee is. So the more things that you do, say for my house, for example, if I put, a rain barrel there and I do other, rain gardens and other things that we will help you with, we at the county will give you a rebate. Churches that had,
So if you show that you did that, you apply to the county for a rebate?
Yep.
Okay. And so how does the private partner thing work with Corvus? They put up some dough, too?
They put up some dough, too, and then they help build out, and they manage the program for us. We hire them. They put up money, and they bring in the other partners here, and we develop it over years.
What kind of things are they doing?
Well, for us, they put together how we're going to actually meet the federal mandate, mm-hmm. and what the businesses in the future are going to need. So you need architects, you need engineers, because it's 500 square miles in our county. And
of surface
of
oh you mean the county
yeah,
is
the county 500
square
miles. So you got big surfaces all around it,
mm-hmm.
and so they're going to help put together the program that's going to last outside of this administration and make sure that we're meeting all the requirements of the federal.
How did you make this happen, or maybe it predates? It doesn't predate you.
No,
fee came in just a couple of years ago.
The fee came in.
Did you get a lot of pushback on it?
We did. Like most folks, when you hear about, a fee being imposed, there's pushback. There was pushback from us. We don't like mandates, whether they're federal mandates or state mandates. But this was one that came from the federal government. What I think the state did, and I think it was probably the best option they could come up with, was to say to the localities, you come up with how you deal with it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you, this is so much you have to deal with in Prince George's County or Montgomery County. You come up with a way. Some counties opted to use general funds. I think in Hartford County, they're looking to put this net. They still have to pay a fee. So people in Hartford County or places who think they're not paying anything, they will. It goes into their general fund. But each county could decide how they're going to deal with it.
Has anyone else, any other jurisdiction, done a private partner, a private-public partnership?
I think ours is the first. Montgomery County was way ahead. I'm not sure what their program was, but they had actually started on their own dealing with the runoff and sediments.
Rusher and Baker is our guest in this hour of midday, getting his perspective on the state budget, the new administration in Annapolis, and some of these other issues that we'll talk about. Also talk about economic development in Prince George's County. We've got a new casino coming online there, but I want to ask you about that. We got a drop in casino revenue up here in the Baltimore area. 410-662-8780. Purple line, red line, we have to talk about that as well. We welcome phone calls. If you have questions for the county executive while he's visiting us in Baltimore today, Rusher and Baker, Prince George's County Executive, our guest. The midday email address is midday@wypr.org. Sure, you heard the news at the top of the hour from NPR about the jobs report for January. American employers adding 257,000 jobs last month, and there's some wage growth also that the Labor Department's reporting. All told, the economy added on average 260,000 jobs a month over the course of the last year. So another strong jobs report, especially toward the end of 2014 coming into this year. So yeah, that's looking good.
That is, the president should be applauded for that.
Rusher and Baker, the Prince George's County executive, how does employment look in Prince George's County these days?
You know, it actually is stabilized. It looks good. I mean, we rely a lot on the federal government. So any of the slowdown in the federal government or sequestration hurts us. But that's one of the reasons we're spending so much time trying to grow and create private sector jobs. I mean, that's been the hallmark of this administration, is to really go out there so that we're not so much reliance on the federal government. But good, we're starting to see a rebound. It's taking slow, but, you know.
Prince George's was also hit pretty hard and when the housing bubble burst and we had the Great Recession. We had lots of foreclosures, as you know, in Prince George's County. What about on that front? How's it looking?
Yeah, well, we're making progress. I mean, I think we're at the point where people were buying subprime, you know, loans and things of that nature. I think we pretty much started working on that and got a really good handle on it, working with both the state and the federal government. Where we're starting to see the slow progress is in two areas. One is, you talked about jobs. A number of our folks were federal employees, so they've gone from, you know, two household incomes to one. And that's hurt in terms of, you know, recovering from the foreclosure. And the other is private sector. Private sector jobs are important because they sustain through the recession and sequestration and things that go on in Capitol Hill have a tremendous impact. And then lastly is, you know, we're rebounded, but the recovery in the county has been slower than what you've seen in Montgomery County or Fairfax County. And I believe, you know, a lot of that has to do with, you know, our houses don't appreciate as much as those other areas because of education. You know, if you look at the school, the places where it's appreciated the fastest, except for D.C., city's always the exception to the rule. You
see greater appreciation in housing values, the better the local school system.
Yeah, if you look at Howard County, look at Fairfax County, Arlington County.
Okay, so on that front, there is some good news in your school system. I wanted to ask you about your superintendent. You made a reference to Kevin Maxwell earlier, Dr. Maxwell. This guy got some great press. I don't know much about him, though, but you lured him away from Anne Arundel County?
I did. I brought him back home. He's fantastic. He was up for superintendent of the year in the nation. He was one of four finalists. Grew up in Prince George's County, had worked in Montgomery County, and was superintendent in Anne Arundel County, but still all the while still lived in Bowie. Children went to public schools, wife taught in our high school, but someone who's, you know, gone to the Navy, been in community college, all the way to getting his doctorate. I mean, he knows it all, and he's attracting great teachers. And for the first time, we're seeing increases in our graduation rates, a reduction in our dropout rates, and an increase in people putting their kids back into our school system.
410-662-8780 is our phone number. If you have a comment or question for our guest this hour, Rusher and Baker, Prince George's County Executive, visiting us today in our studio in Baltimore. Kathy in Severn with a question. Kathy, welcome to the show.
Yes, thank you. I enjoy your show because of the local issues, and I used to read you when the sun was much thicker.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, my comment refers back to rebates for such things as rain barrels and so on. One thing that I guess my personal axe to grind is lawn chemicals and those any kind of chemicals that you put in your yard. My husband and I are the only two in our neighborhood who don't use them, and most people are walking around with Roundup in their hand literally every day anytime they see something pop up. And I was just thinking that a rebate for people who do not, I know the lawn services wouldn't like this, but do not, you know, or decide to go to organic with their lawn and their yard and making it. Because actually we're seeing dead rabbits who are being killed around the neighborhood. I think we've had about four just kind of crawl up in the yard and die. And it had to do with chemicals, I do believe.
So you're thinking if you go organic, if you can show that you switched to organic or that you stopped putting fertilizer in your lawn, would that count under the stormwater remediation? Because all this dust drains into the little creeks and rivers that flow into the bay through Prince George's County and the other
counties. That's a good comment. I'll have to ask our director of environment whether we've actually looked at that or not. But that's a good comment. I mean, I know we talked about pesticides and things that were being used and you know, trying to discourage people from using stuff that's not safe when it runs off. So I will ask you. That's a good comment.
A couple other things I want to talk to you about regards to the governor's budget. This inflation indexed increase in the state gasoline tax that the legislature put in place so that it's there. I had a question about it. I don't know if you can answer this, but you know, the price of oil has been coming down. We've seen gas prices falling. Are we really going to see an increase, an indexed increase in the gasoline tax? Is that necessary?
Well, I think that's you just hit on what a lot of legislators were saying in when the governor brought this up in a speech. I don't think so, not anytime soon. And then the other part is the governor has talked about increasing highway user fund. That's where you get it from. You know, so I don't know how you square both.
You came into office in 2010, right?
I came in 2010.
2010. And during that time, the state was cutting back on local aid for roads, right, for the counties.
I was about to use a word I probably shouldn't use
on
the air.
That's all right. Yes,
they were.
Yeah.
And so one of the reasons, and I was in the legislature in 1994 trying to raise the gasoline tax so we could have more highway user fund and put it back, and we simply couldn't do it. So finally, after plotting these, you know, last 4 years, we get the revenues in there. You know, it's just now coming. You know, so cutting back on it would be harmful to highways and roads.
The purple line.
Yes.
Up here in Baltimore, we have the red line,
yes,
which has been proposed. There's money available to build the red line, but the state has to come up with its part of it to get the thing started, and the purple line as well. Multi-billion-dollar projects, these. A purple line, which would connect Bethesda and New Carrollton, right?
That's so right. You come over to College Park.
It would connect your county with Montgomery County. You're a supporter of the purple line.
I'm a supporter of the purple line, and I'm a supporter of the red line. I think if you're talking about creating jobs and giving business opportunities, which growing that commercial tax base, this is the way you do it. You're investing not only in transportation, but you're also investing in job creation in the future. And so if the economic hubs are the Baltimore region and the Washington region, then you got to invest in those.
Where is the purple line in terms of permitting approvals? Where does it stand? Does it stand where the red line stands about it?
Right, but the President Obama just announced funding at the federal level for the purple line. So if we walk away from the purple line, we're going to be losing millions of dollars. And more importantly, I think for the purple line and the red line, is that we lose our place dealing with the federal government and those fundings. It goes elsewhere. People think you can redirect it. Like somebody said, well, why don't you just spend that on
roads?
You know, roads. Mm-hmm. You can't. You can't redirect it, and we lose it to other states.
Well, the governor so far has it in his budget. He has the state's share to get the thing started in the first year here, 2015-16. He has that in his budget.
Right. So I think it's on... It's on life support for us. I've said that before. I think there's a good chance we can push him on it. But if I can say real quickly on the purple line for us in the county, we're trying to attract the FBI, which are, 1,100 jobs coming to the state of Maryland. In order to do that, we have to make our case strong. And one of the ways to make it strong is by having the purple line, having the access along the Green Line and Landover sites, which are the two sites in Maryland, to be able to come here and just think about getting the FBI headquarters in the state of Maryland, in Prince George's County, would be a big economic boom for us.
You also have a new hospital, or you have one underway. Am I right about that?
I do. We were pleased, and I want to thank the governor for, in his budget, including the $30 million that will help us build the new regional medical center in Largo. The thing that we missed out and we're asking the governor put in supplemental budget is $15 million for the ongoing maintenance for the for Dimensions Hospital, which we need to stand up the old hospital until we can actually build the new one. But it's going to be a great thing for not only the county, but for the state. It's an economic boom because it's going to be around the metro center. It will create medical jobs for our kids coming out of our
schools. So is it a publicly owned hospital?
It is a it will be part of the new entity. Will be part a combination of Dimensions, which is private nonprofit, UMS, University of Maryland Medical Center, and those two will come together with of course county and state resources, and they will form a new entity.
And that's called, what will that be called?
We don't know yet, but
But it's a regional medical center.
It's the regional medical center because it covers the southern part of Maryland.
Okay, let me ask you about the casino. Let's go right to this.
Yes, excited.
MGM Resort Casino. I've been down to National Harbor. I've seen the location.
Isn't it nice?
Well, yeah, if you like that kind of thing. Yeah, I mean, it is. I mean, okay. It's a little Oz. It's the wonderful world of Oz there on the banks of the Potomac. Okay. But I'm thinking, we've got a casino in Baltimore now, Horseshoe. Mm-hmm. 11 miles away, we've had Maryland Live, which has been doing quite well. We've got one up in the Hollywood Casino. I guess that's still operating up in Cecil County. Rocky Gap. Well, that's Western Maryland, Rocky Gap. But the ones that are nearby, Maryland Live and Baltimore's Horseshoe.
Right.
I'm still scratching my head about the proximity of those two. And then I understand that the banks of the Potomac River is still, 40 miles away?
I like when you say the banks of the Potomac River.
Yeah, well, National Harbor. It take you 40, 45 minutes to drive it anyway, right? So it's not exactly next door.
No.
But I'm looking at saturation of the market. Are we counting on too much on these casinos? We had a report yesterday about... after several strong months, the last couple of months at the casinos here haven't been as strong. They've seen a drop in revenue.
Yeah, I mean, when we first looked at expanding the number of casinos in the state, that's one of the issues that came up. It was actually one that Governor O'Malley brought up. What I said, and the reason I support this, and I'm very honest, I think when I came on your show, I told you that when I was in the legislature, I did not vote for gaming. The citizens of the state of Maryland changed that. But if you're going to have a fifth casino, it needed to be something more than just slots and table games. It had to be able to survive a downturn in the casino market. And I think the reason that I like MGM and I like the location is it's more than just table games and slot machines. It's an entertainment. So there's a venue where entertainment will come there. And the people that we're drawing on in that place are not necessarily from Maryland. They're from Virginia, the district, and international. there's a huge international group that comes to the nation's capital. Given our proximity to the nation's capital, Virginia, we're going to be attracting those folks as the main drawers. So, you know, it's not even really so much the state of Maryland.
I'm just looking at the map, and I see, I can understand why if you're in Virginia where there is no gambling, right? You want to drive
D.C.
You drive north, and maybe until National Harbor opens or MGM Resort, you would drive to Arundel Mills, or you maybe even consider a trip to Baltimore to gamble. But now you'd be stopped at the on the banks of the Potomac River. Right? No, I'm just
I know where you're going.
You know, well, it's, I'm looking looking ahead because the state is counting on all this revenue, right?
Right. And no, they are, but I think. I think given the fact that the district doesn't have gaming and Virginia doesn't, and maybe we'll get some folks from North Carolina.
Mm-hmm. What do you? What's the timetable on the MGM Resort?
Well, it's, right now it's the summer of 2016 that it will open, but the construction is going on now. It looks great. You know, we're excited.
Rusher and Baker is our guest in this hour of midday, the Prince George's County Executive. You can reach us with a question at 410-662-8780 or send us an email with a question. I got a couple of those to read in just a moment. midday@wypr.org. Over on the Eastern Shore, Alan in Kent County. Thanks for calling in. How you doing, Alan?
Oh, good. Thank you, sir, for taking my call.
Sure.
I just had a comment on that. Your guest saying Maryland is the richest state in one of the richest states in the union. Mm-hmm. And I think that's misleading in some respects that and if, correct me if I'm wrong, if that's an average, if you add up everyone's salary and then you're divided by the number of people. And I think a better gauge would be how many people are under poverty, in the state of Maryland versus other states. So I think it's kind of misleading when you say that. You got multimillionaires and you're averaging their income against someone's making $20,000, then it looks like their salary is way up there. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, we know what you're saying. But the median household income, according to the last American Community Survey, that's from the Census Bureau. I just looked at it the other day, and it was $78,000 median household income in Maryland, which made us the richest, by that measure, the richest. But you're correct, totally correct, Alan. By contrast, Somerset County, Maryland, which I looked at the other day, I was looking at the first congressional district represented by Andy Harris for my column in The Sun. You know, he's an opponent of the Affordable Care Act and voted again on Tuesday to repeal it. So I was looking at enrollment in the Affordable Care Act, under the Affordable Care Act, in his district. Mm-hmm. And I was looking at poverty rates and low income levels. Somerset County is by far the poorest county. Contrast that 78,000 median household income with 38,000 median household income in Somerset County and a poverty rate of 23-point-something%, which made it the highest in the state and in the middle toward the high end in the country.
Wow.
So, I mean, he's totally correct about right. that. I don't know what Prince George's County is off the top of my head. I'd have to go to my source and look it up. But
we're above the nation average. We're about 71, I believe, or 72. We're above the nation's average in terms of medium household income. We have pockets of poverty in the county, which because we're near the District of Columbia, we deal with that. But by and large, if you look at and I think this is the point, is this is a wealthy state. So it's kind of hard when you're dealing with states that are really struggling. You know, like Mississippi or places like that, to say, you know, it's dire and the sky's falling into Maryland, to look at you like, no, we got real issues here. And we don't have the federal government around with job opportunities the way we do in the state of Maryland. Clearly, we have ways to go. We want to increase the number of private sector jobs here. You know, things are moving in the right direction.
410-662-8780. You're listening to Midday on WYPR, WYPO, WYPF. Dan Roderick's here with Rush Schoenbaker, the Prince George's County Executive. We can take your call about anything you'd like to talk about regarding state, local government, even national politics. If you like, 410-662-8780. We'll be right back.
We'll be right back.
just, if you don't mind, I'll just share some information with our listeners about because of the call from Alan there on the state of the state of Maryland, the poverty rate in the state of Maryland. That's persons living below the poverty level as set by the federal government, which is pretty low. Right. We're at 9.8% statewide. The nation is at 15.4% poverty. Median household income, as I said, actually, I stated it a little high. I had 78. It's actually, I was off. It's 73,538. Whereas the nation, the median household income for the nation by 2013 was 53,000. So we're so Maryland is $20,000 a year ahead of the nation's median household income.
Exactly. We're doing well. I'd like to make a correction so the folks out there don't go crazy, and that is for the FBI coming to the state of Maryland would be 11,000 jobs.
Oh, you said 1,100.
I said 1,100. There's a lot more jobs coming here if we can get the FBI coming here. And I think the speaker debumps the number up to 13,000.
They want to move because of their headquarters in D.C. is too small, too old, too ugly, too what?
All of the above. and what they would do is they would it would consolidate their headquarters. And so it's a great opportunity for the state of Maryland. It's a tremendous opportunity for us in Prince George's County.
Is anybody else competing with you for it?
Virginia. So we have two sites, one site in Virginia that's up and two sites in the state of Maryland that are up. And I have to say, we've been really blessed that we've got a great congressional delegation led by our phenomenal Senator Mikulski and Senator Cardin and Steny Hoyer and the others.
Have you talked to the new governor about this?
Yes. This is one where the governor is on board, and we're very glad. In fact, you know, he is committed to the infrastructure cost that will go around it. That's one of the things the FBI is looking at, commitment up front if you're selected for the infrastructure. He's committed to that. He's been right on board from day one on this, so we're very pleased with that.
Is there a site in mind?
There are two sites in the county. One is by the Greenbelt Metro Station, which would be a great, you know, transit. And it will fit all the parameters that the federal government has laid out. And the other is Landover Mall, which is right off 450, 202, great access to Largo Metro Station. So we in the county and state have two really great sites. But if you throw the Purple Line in there, it elevates us even more.
Rush Aaron Baker is our guest in this hour of midday. He's the Prince George's County Executive. Let's take another call. Monroe in Bel Air, thank you for calling.
Yeah, thank you for taking my call. I would like to know a couple things. Number one, how could Martin O'Malley claim to be the governor of Maryland when he only won three subdivisions? And concerning the casino or the resort on the Potomac River, how much wetland and woodlands will be destroyed and could have impervious surfaces, which would allow runoff into the Potomac River? And concerning Montgomery County, what kind of reforestation or woodland protection are you imposing upon builders, or just letting them go crazy? And my last point is, when will the state government stop the embezzlement that goes on through the Maryland legislature? In other words, taking money from one fund, putting it in another, and then the next year coming back and saying, oh, my God, we're so short in that, we have to raise taxes, okay, which is a typical Democratic left-wing proposal.
Okay, Monroe, I've been taking notes here so we can answer all of those. First, the reference to Montgomery County and forestation and development. Actually, we're speaking about Prince George's County
right
today. So maybe you want to address that one first, and I have notes on the others here.
Right. I mean, we have a great policy. We're focusing our development around our Interbeltway areas where the greatest needs are, and that's been it. And we're pleased to have some of the greenest areas around, so we're very mindful of that. And I can answer real quick about the casino.
Follow up. Is there any reforestation program in Prince George's County? I mean, is it part of your stormwater
program? It is. It's, well, even before the stormwater management program came in, the state was very big in the reforestation effort, so the county participates.
Wetlands at National Harbor and the new casino.
No, the casino is going to be on a plateau at the top, and so the beauty of not having to deal with that issue is that National Harbor has been developed over the last, 20 years, so those issues have been dealt with.
It's already there, most
right.
of it, and you're going to plunk in a casino someplace
right.
near the
exactly.
big hotel, right? The hotel is there?
It was actually on a plateau above the where the hotel
above
is.
Above the hotel.
Right, so it's probably about, 5 miles away from the hotel.
Now, Monroe referred to embezzlement. People are annoyed by this transfer of money that the legislature does, the governor does, the previous governor does, take money out of program open space to use it over here. Take money out of the transportation trust fund to use it over here. Are you going to replenish it someday? Yes, they replenish it. But the fact that it's done annoys people.
Right.
It's one of those budget gimmicks. And you used to be in the legislature. You used to take part in this.
I used to be on.
You were on the appropriations committee,
appropriation
right?
When Pete Rollins was the chair, chair.
Can we just say you probably learned a lot of this from Howard Pete Rollins?
He was the best. He was a great teacher.
The father of the mayor of Baltimore, who was probably a mentor of yours.
He definitely was. I was fortunate enough to have him as a mentor. I wouldn't be able to do this job if it hadn't been for him.
He was really good at that.
He was great at it, but he also was very physically conservative is something that he taught us. He didn't spend money we didn't have. And he made sure where money was targeted, especially around education, that it was kept in there. One of the great debates around increasing the gas tax was an assurance that almost a lockbox of that fund staying in there. And I think that's part of the debate that people had and the assurance in the legislature. I think without that, you wouldn't have gotten the gas tax passed.
A political question about Martin O'Malley winning three jurisdictions, or actually it's been said in Maryland, if you can win Prince George's, Montgomery, and Baltimore City, if in a statewide election, you can win office.
Oh, wow. That's a good thing to know.
Yeah. Well, and Larry Hogan, of course, picked up support well outside of that. I want to ask you this question that came in by email I thought was interesting from one of our listeners. Please ask Executive Baker about the urban versus rural divide in Maryland and how being considered rural is often cover for Republicans that don't care for diversity, the Bay, or investing in communities. Baltimore City, Hyattsville, Silver Spring, Cumberland, Salisbury, etc. Surely, being the leader of Maryland's second largest jurisdiction, he has a perspective on this.
Yeah, you know what? It's one of the things I learned as a legislator, actually, not as county executive. When I went to Annapolis, I did not realize the real debate was not between Republicans and Democrats. It was between rural districts and suburban or urban districts. And what I've seen happen and what we try to do, especially around the Big Seven, when there is both rural county executives and the mayor and Ike Leggett and myself and others, is really see where the similarities are. You talk about education. The education problems we face in Prince George's County, they're having the same problems in Western Maryland or Eastern Shore. Those are the ones when we talk about the geographic index that we team up with, along with Baltimore City. There are brethren in that. When you talk about the Chesapeake Bay and the cleaning of it, it doesn't mean that if you're in Prince George's County, you care less about that than people on the shore do. No, we care the same. And so it's finding commonalities of us working together on these issues and making, what Cass Taylor used to say, one Maryland.
From Allegheny County.
That's right.
And also, you were in the legislature when the Thornton formula went into place for education, right? I mean, that took a lot of work to get people on board with that.
It did. And, but the coming together was a lot of the smaller jurisdictions that didn't have the tax base the same way neither Baltimore City nor Prince George's County did and dealt with some of the critical problems that are going on. And so coming together to get that.
Let's take another call. Fred in Annapolis, go right ahead with your question. Hi.
Hey, thanks to the county executive for his stormwater program. Unfortunately, Mike Bush and Mike Miller have made it clear that they're not going to repeal the stormwater fee. But since the county executive is constantly looking for money, my question is, has he looked at the potential revenue from legalizing marijuana that could come to Prince George's County?
It's an interesting question. I did get that. I am for decriminalization of marijuana, and there has been some talk about legalization, but that's a state issue, and they deal with revenues on that way.
Okay. So you support it.
I support decriminalization because I think it just takes resources away from our police department, where in the county we can focus better on.
This isn't the first time you've said that, is it? I'm just trying to measure whether this is newsy or not.
No,
you've said it before. You've been asked this before.
I've been asked about decriminalization and legalization before.
David, you're up next. Go right ahead with your question. Hi.
Hi, thanks for taking the call. I'm Victor. Victor, thanks for your work.
Thank you. I'm calling
as a person who has family living in PG County, most recently live in Baltimore, but I'm serving active duty in North Carolina.
Okay.
I've noticed a trend over the past 10 years I've been in and out of Maryland is that people getting priced out of D.C. and those at the lower end of the socioeconomic strata moving to southern, particularly, you know, parts of PG County.
Right.
I'm interested to learn what sort of programs and innovations you have in place, in addition to the school issue you mentioned earlier, to provide other social services for such individuals. As an example, my brother works in a clinic in D.C. providing free dental care over at Bradford City for people who don't have insurance. Increasingly, many people are coming from Maryland or PG County in particular to get services in D.C. I can take this response offline.
Okay, Dave.
Thank you. I mean, one of the programs that's a signature initiative of this administration is our Transforming Neighborhoods Initiative, which is focusing on the six areas of Prince George's County, which is, like the state, a fairly wealthy county, the wealthiest majority African-American county in the nation. But we have pockets of poverty. In those six areas, we have challenges, as the gentleman said.
So they're right on the borders with the D.C.,
right? They're right on the borders of the District of Columbia. Yeah. And so what we've done is we've done wraparound services. So we increased the number of clinics that will connect to our regional medical center. We've also looked at job opportunities in those areas. We focus on crime reduction and quality housing, making sure that we can offer quality housing, jobs, and a social net, so having our social services, family services.
Well, one of our guests on the show yesterday, Sherry Parks, made an allusion to this. Wayne has a question. What are the economic plans for the development on Route 1 near the University of Maryland College Park? Does the county plan to expand, build more programs like the College Park Academy? Anyway, economic development plans around there. Sherry Parks was on the show. Associate Dean there was talking about this yesterday.
Yeah, it's exciting what's going to happen around the University of Maryland and College Park. We're actually building a conference center and hotel there. It is in part of our arts district in our revitalization. So what we're hoping to see, and that's why the Purple Line, which will be directly connected to this, will be able to have us go our arts district from College Park all the way to the Rhode Island Metro Station in D.C., where restaurants and places to shop and eat along that way. But we're excited about what's going to happen there.
Sherry made reference to the concept of college town, more of a college town feel around College Park.
Yeah, I mean, the hotel and conference center that's coming in, restaurants that are springing up. We've got a Whole Foods that's coming in Riverdale right next to College Park that will be offered there. And, you know, when she talked about College Park Academy, our educational opportunities in those areas that we're going to attract some of the professors to live in Maryland and in Prince George's County.
What is that?
It is a charter school, actually, that was started and doing very well.
Now, this is a subject we didn't get to. The idea of loosening up the law in the state regarding charter schools to make charter schools more possible.
Yeah, I mean, I think you can look at charter schools, but the idea is funding for education. I think that's the main thing.
For the public schools that you have.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, Sherman Baker is the county executive of Prince George's County, visiting with us today here on the Midday Show in our first hour. It's nice to have you with us again, sir.
Good to be here.
Yeah, please come back and visit again. Enjoy the conversation. Thank you, everybody, for tuning in. It's the first hour of Midday, another hour of Midday coming up, so please stay tuned for that. We got a break here for lunch, provided on Fridays. by Joe Squared Pizza. Joe Squared is located at 133 West North Avenue in the Station North neighborhood at the Inner Harbor at Power Plant Live, and you can find them on the web at joesquared.com. So thank you, Joe Squared, for lunch. Thank you, everybody, for tuning in. Stay tuned for the second hour after the news from NPR.